It is our function as artists to make the spectator see the world our way, not his way.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zeke here, along with Finn and John, and you are listening to the Movement Museum. It's 2:04 in the afternoon, March 26th. That Final Fantasy piece made me want to go to sleep or something like that. I'm not entirely certain. But yes, how y'all doing?
Doing great.
That's good. Okay, cool. Yeah, this is Movement Museum, as I said. It's on CKUT 90.3 FM on your radio dial. And we are talking about dance over the airwaves. And today we have a action-packed and jam-filled show for you. Complete with, John, you have something that I have no clue about, but you apparently got some wicked cool interesting thing happening there.
Yeah, I did a little interview with Matt Brown, who's, I guess, a performer. Musician,
but he's been blending a lot of dance with his music. He's been performing. He performs live with an iPod and dances and sings along, and it's got a lot of hip hop influence, really upbeat kind of stuff. So I just wanted to get his word on how he's approaching movement. So I've got some material on that coming up.
Okay, very cool. And I apologize, your microphone was off for that first little bit. I couldn't figure out why
that was the best part.
Couldn't figure out why those needles weren't dancing around on the board. Mm-hmm. And Finn, you don't have anything other than your beautiful, lovely, and talented self today.
Well, yes, I'm just here for support and interesting commentary on the sides. But I'm working on a couple things, including some fun segments, more on the Montreal Dancing Diaries, all about hip-hop and breakdancing. And tonight I'm going to some awesome classes at Studio Sweatshop. So we'll have more to talk about that later on. And this weekend, I'm going to make it to a cool dance show because, yes, I do actually attend dance performances as well that involves home appliances. So maybe we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, no, it's that domestic thing is very, very interesting. In the meantime, as I take a deep breath, I think we need to get ourselves a little bit organized, take a deep breath, calm down, or maybe just wake up out of that Final Fantasy thing. And so we are going to play something called Songs About Dancing and Drugs. It's by this band Circle Square, and I think I pulled up Hey You Guys.
This is us, here we go.
Hello, and welcome back to CKUT's Movement Museum. We're on 90.3 FM, and this is Finn talking with John about how he actually found Nut Brown as someone to interview.
Yeah, Nut Brown is just somebody that I've seen perform a couple times. I believe I saw him at Il Motore up on Jean Talon, and he was performing alongside some other indie bands. But he was doing something a little bit different. He was using a lot of movement, a lot of hip-hop moves. He had put down his guitar and was just giving it up on stage. So I thought it would be interesting to try and get his perspective on what he's trying to do with music, what he's trying to express, and some of his influences. So I met with him, and we talked a little while. And we're going to be presenting that pretty soon.
I'm just copying it to the desktop.
That's going to be great. So I should mention that Nut Brown is performing tonight. He's going to be at Kaji B at 8 p.m. And Kaji B is on the corner of Saint-Viateur and Saint-Laurent. Mm-hmm. He's performing.
They also have great soy lattes, for the record. $2.25. I'm not kidding. This is like the best deal ever.
They've got great soy lattes. So go down, get yourself a soy latte, and maybe catch some great dance on stage.
What time does it start at?
With Nut Brown. It starts at 8 p.m.
And do you know if there's a ticket price?
Or is it free? I don't know the ticket price. It's probably somewhere in around $5, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Don't quote me on that.
It's a venue that does a pass the hat kind of thing, too. So
it could be just pass the hat.
Mm-hmm. So I bring cash and give it up for Nut Brown. Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of moving farther and farther away from guitar music. You know, I don't listen to a lot of guitar music anymore, and it just really felt limiting as far as the way I think about music, you know, and also the way I perform on stage. It was really limiting, and any time like I broke a string, I always had like the best time because I would just put down the guitar and play through the songs and sing and dance and fall around on stage. So it was just those moments felt really good to me, and I just wanted to kind of do more of that, you know. I need love like that. Well, I'm tired of the guitar. Let me do other things. And now I'm standing here with a microphone, and I have to perform. And I even when I had a guitar, I moved. So it was very natural to start thinking about the way I move and working on the way I move, and you know. And getting it to be, like you said, more a part of the performance. Why won't you show me your love? Show me love. This is mine. I was like looking at a lot of performers that I really enjoy like listening to and watching. Like people like Morrissey, who is not specifically a dancer, but the way he moves is really wonderful. And like David Byrne, or you know, people who aren't necessarily dancers, but performers who move in a really wonderful way. Even like some more 80s acts like George Michael, and I was surfing through a lot of like watching a lot of YouTube clips, but also like hip hop. I'm not a dancer, and I'm not trained in any sort of way, and it definitely comes from the I guess the rock and roll tradition of the lead singer. But I do really, I love, I got into watching like America's best dance troupe or something, hip hop dance troupe, and then so you think you can dance, and I really like the choreographed dancing that you see on there, especially like the hip hop and the popping and the, you know, I think about those things in it, but on stage if it comes out, it comes out. I don't have anything specifically choreographed. I'm starting to notice through performing more and more in this way that, you know, there's certain steps that I do like, and certain like gestures that I can use and kind of grab while I'm doing my performance. But yeah, I don't have any like, okay, in this bar of music I'm going to be doing 1, 2, 3, 4 with these steps. Either a lyrical cue, which will, you know, either specifically point to a gesture that I might make with my hands, or you know, my feet. If, you know, if I do have a song where I say the word run, and so I do like to run in those moments, you know, like it could be as simple as that. I always loved that George Michael video. I don't know if most people don't know it, but it's a monkey on your back, and throughout much of the video he's on stage live, and he's like running, he's got the most giant stage ever, and he's kind of running from one side of the stage, I don't know what to, but it just, I like that, I like running on stage. Well, you know, I would like the music is probably the dominant part of my performance, right? Like, I am trying to make a record, and I don't think you need to necessarily see me dance to get it all. But I once heard of like Brian Eno would. He'd write songs, and then he would have session musicians come in and play his songs, and he would describe the feeling or how the ideas he had through moving his body. Like I do think about that a lot, and try to use that, like when I even thinking about musical parts, you know. Like how it would look if that certain melody or sound was a person moving, you know. Definitely. Yeah, I think that music is, or can be, maybe it's not exclusively, but like, well, the music that I enjoy, and I think that a lot of people enjoy, is really connected to the body and how we move and express ourselves is very similar to how somebody would play. Like playing an instrument is a part of, for most of it, you are moving, like playing drums, for example. I've always enjoyed playing drums because it's such a physical physical expression, and you know, we have two hands, we have two feet, and that defines how we play music, you know, with when it's physical like that, especially, you know, rock or dance or, you know, maybe not so much, but I think even for classical or, you know, the other forms, I think if we had different bodies, we would make different music, you know? The music would sound totally different if we had, like, no hands.
to see my shrink. It felt like butterflies flying, what do you think? It felt like I was dying, I was already dead.
I'm taking like level one hip hop, level one dance hall. I've taken like salsa dancing, and I like to take dance lessons. It's a good way to kind of absorb different ideas, not in a kind of like, hey, that move is, I could use that move, but just in a way of seeing different ideas as far as how the body can move, and yeah, and it's really fun.
Thanks so much for coming into Movement Museum, and good luck with the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, John.
Going to school? Keep it in your jeans. Seriously. I bought my own space at Club Sommet, so my money's going into my pocket, not my landlord's. I can walk to school, clubs, shopping, the metro. I've got two pools, gym, rooftop deck, even my own concierge, Charles. And, okay, my parents helped a bit.
Own downtown at Club Sommet from 156.9. Visit clubsommet.ca/campus or see our models at 3475 Rue de la Montagne.
Hello and welcome back to Movement Museum. It's now 2:23-ish and 35 seconds according to my watch. And John, how is the weather today?
The weather is looking a little bit muggy.
Aw.
But it's nice outside. I suggest getting a walk in. I don't know whether it's going to rain.
And they say it's going to rain.
So. Oh, is that right? So yeah. Get out and walk now, so, folks.
Yeah, enjoy it while you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow. So that was a really cool interview.
That was Matt Brown.
So you've seen him perform?
Yeah, I've seen him perform a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I say it's a really dynamic show. A lot of dancing, a lot of jumping, and some running even.
Apparently, yes. I have images of what tentacle-generated music might be like from his comments about our bodies being a part of the sounds that we make. So did you... I have to ask, when he's dancing, does it look like he's moving like he's making the sound, like he's dancing like a musician, or is he dancing like, you know, he's following the sound or like responding to it? Like,
right, that's an interesting question.
Where is he in relation to the sounds that he's playing with?
I'd say he's probably somewhere in between, because he was formerly played guitar a lot, and so he probably still has some of those movements somehow in his body.
Yeah.
But now he is sort of doing more hip hop influenced, you know, choreographed material that you'd see. Yeah. Maybe other bands, maybe I don't know, what are some of the bands who do the hip hop kind of
the whole full show thing?
Yeah, like, the full show.
Yeah,
exactly.
In my limited exposure to hip hop, I find it's easier to do the style than to imitate the style. So does he ever work with other dancers?
I've only seen him do a solo show, but he did say that if he was at a party, often the audience will get involved. So I guess he's working with other dancers in a sense.
That's pretty awesome, getting together with that, trading back and forth the moves and stuff like that. But
yeah, that would totally be an interesting interaction.
And where is he playing again?
He is going to be playing down at Kaji B tonight, starting at 8 p.m., along with two other groups, Super Fossil Power and I think Eleanor Thompson. And so that's the corner of St. Viator and St. Laurent, and they have great soy lattes.
Yes. Well, it's a café au lait, but les soy. Anyway, yes, yeah.
Either of the
good
two.
Good stuff, yeah.
At which point... thank you for doing the time check. It is 2:25 and 55 seconds now. you're listening to CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. I finally got that phrase straight. I'm so happy. And we will be coming up with an actual interview done with Merce Cunningham, that is, and that's why there's the John Cage music playing very quietly in the back room. Today is obviously a very calm and quieting sort of afternoon here at Movement Museum.
Except for our ads.
Yes, we're going to have to talk to somebody about that. Get them sort of to segue in a little bit easier, maybe bring down something or somehow. Right. Apologies if I blew any eardrums out there. That was entirely my fault. Yeah, as far as I can tell, hopefully anybody who's listening doesn't really need any introduction to Merce Cunningham. If you do, I snagged a whole whack of stuff from Wikipedia, which is where the intro comes in, and then the actual interview was done back on, I think, April 25th, 2008. So it was almost a year ago when he was visiting off on the left coast, and there was this program that very graciously...
You mean west coast?
Left coast, yeah. You look at that map, at which point it's just everything's left and right, and it's a right-handed person's world. We're on the right coast.
That's very Northern Hemisphere-oriented.
Also, even New York-oriented or Montreal-oriented. It's those people who are hanging out in the center. Never mind, how about I start taking my foot out of my mouth before it even gets in.
So, Merce Cunningham.
Yes, how about we just go to the interview? Hold on. How about we go to the interview?
Let's hit the mark, and let's do this. Merce Cunningham was born in Centralia, Washington on April 16, 1919, and received his first formal dance and theater training at the Cornish School in Seattle. From 1939 to 1945, he was a soloist in the company of Martha Graham. He presented his first New York solo concert in April 1944 with John Cage, who became his romantic partner until Cage's death in 1992. The Merce Cunningham Dance Company was formed at Black Mountain College in the summer of 1953. Since that time, Cunningham has choreographed nearly 200 works for his company. His work has also been presented by New York City Ballet, American Ballet Theater, the Ballet of the Paris Opera, Boston Ballet, and numerous others. Cunningham has worked extensively in film and video, first in collaboration with Charles Atlas and later with Elliot Kaplan. In 1999, the collaboration with Atlas was resumed in the production of the documentary Merce Cunningham, A Lifetime of Dance. In 2004, they collaborated again on a new piece presented in two versions, Views on Camera and Views on Video. Cunningham's interest in contemporary technology has led him to work with the computer program Danceforms, which he has used in making all his dances since 1991. In 1997, he began work in motion capture with Paul Kayser and Shelley Eskar of Riverbed Media to develop the decor for Biped, with music by Gavin Bryars first performed in 1999. Another major work, Interscape, first given in 2000, reunited Cunningham with his early collaborator Robert Rauschenberg, who designed both decor and costumes for the dance, which has music by Cage. In August 2001, Cunningham returned to the stage in the first theatrical presentations of Cage's An Alphabet at the Edinburgh Festival, with subsequent engagements in Berlin, Champaign-Urbana, Berkeley, and Perth in Western Australia. In the revival of How to Pass, Kick, Fall, and Run, first performed in the 2002 Lincoln Center Festival at the New York State Theater. Merce Cunningham, together with David Vaughn, read the accompanying stories by John Cage.
Enough about Merce Cunningham. Suffice it to say he's an extremely important person in the field of contemporary dance. Last April, he gave an interview to Jeffrey Callison. Here it is.
I'm Jeffrey Callison. One of the greatest choreographers of modern times is in town. Merce Cunningham and his dance company are in residence at the Mondavi Centre all this week. Since founding his company in 1953, Cunningham has revolutionised modern dance, and he's still doing it, aged 89, still fully engaged in his work. A couple of days ago, I sat down with Cunningham in a dressing room at the Mondavi Centre, along with Trevor Carlson, the dance company's executive director. Cunningham is famous in part for his frequent use of chance in his choreography, and I started by asking him what that means. How exactly does he make use of chance operations when creating a dance?
I make a series of separate movements, phrases of movement, and then using chance operations, throwing dice or pennies or whatever, as to what the continuity will be. That is, instead of coming from my own physical memory or thinking that way, I open it up to an unknown situation so that one has to keep, in a sense, inventing ways to move and not simply accepting the things one already knows about.
You said rolling a dice, flipping a coin. Do you mean that at all literally, or is that a metaphor?
Yes, I have a great deal of this thinking of this way comes from the Chinese Book of Changes, the I Ching, which has 64 hexagrams. And so I found eight dice that are eight-sided in a small store in Minneapolis on one tour, and each die is a different color. So I have eight separate colors, each of which are eight-sided, so that I could throw up to 64 possibilities.
And what is your role as the creator of the dance when chance is such an important part of it?
Well, first of all, I have to make up the separate phrases, of course, but then it's the continuity that working this way, you have to rethink how, or redo, really, how you thought something should go. Instead of doing it in a way that one is accustomed to, the chance operation presents you with a situation you wouldn't know about or might not, and you have to find a way to work with that. So it's like, constantly being surprised.
How often does chance throw up something where you go, oh my goodness, this is tremendous? And how often does it throw up something where you go, that's not going to work?
It brings up things which are, in a sense, you think physically impossible, but we go ahead and try them anyway. And even though that's impossible, we come across something else that we hadn't thought of out of the process of working this way.
When you say physically impossible, you mean physically impossible for a human dancer to do?
Yes. Or one hadn't thought that kind of continuity was, for some reason, not proper or not possible. But mostly in my case, I try to accept it and work with it, whatever it is, because always something comes up that you hadn't dealt with before.
You have for a long time also been a pioneer in using the computer to aid in choreography, dance forms, the software, I understand, is as it is called. Has that helped you make more use of chance or better use of chance in your choreography?
I use it in the dance forms because you have a figure on which you place a shape, and then you, in the dance forms, the timeline, you can move to another spot, say 30 seconds later, or however you arrange the counting, and then put in a different figure, and then you can go back, and the computer will go from the first one in the most reasonable way to this one. But also you look at all that time in between and think, well, perhaps you could put something else in there, in that. So I try that, adding something to see whether we might not find out, again, some part of the moving process that we hadn't experienced before. I always bring these things back to the dancers, and ordinarily often will put them in a class exercise form so we can find out how to do them, how to deal with it.
What's it like for the dancers working in a format like that?
Well, when we began to use these chance operations, first of all, it was simply incredibly difficult to memorize because your mind had for years experienced movement in a certain way, and here were things coming up which you never dealt with before. And then with the dancers, I would put them in a class shape so that the dancers could get at it. But it was extremely difficult. But now things that were difficult then are no longer difficult for them to see. Something changes in the way computers have changed the way we think or how we deal with things. It's in that sense, this is part of that.
Where do the dances exist when they're not being performed? Do they exist solely in your mind and in the dancers' minds?
I make notes often of dance in order to remember in a way, but we also naturally take videos of the pieces now, which is one way of remembering, of bringing them back. Also, I think we often, Robert Swinston, who assists me when we're trying to bring back a dance, say, from some years ago, with which we don't have much notes or whatever, he often calls up dancers who were in it, who may not, they're not dancing with us anymore, but they're still perhaps performing in what way, and ask them if they remember anything. And he will get something over the telephone, which he can put together with someone, something what somebody else said. And gradually we begin to piece out a dance. Mostly it's, I think, through the taping.
I'm talking with the famed choreographer, Merce Cunningham, who's in residency this week at UC Davis's Mondavi Center. Are any of your dances ever finished?
Finished?
Yeah, in other words, where you go, there's nothing more to be done with that. Just dance.
I don't think of it that way, but I stop. I say, well, this is all right. Or often we have asked a composer to make something, whatever situation we're in, as a sound accompaniment. And they always want to know how long it's to be. So I can say, well, this one will be 20 minutes. Well, that's we've agreed upon, both of us, about that it's the amount of time we each will occupy in our separate ways.
And you started doing that with John Cage back in the 50s, working
yes,
that way.
Yes, yes.
Have any composers that you've worked with said, can you not give me some idea of what you want to do on the stage so that I can write appropriately?
Every composer has a different way about working this way. John Cage always wanted to know the length, and did I have any idea about the internal structure? Say, are there so many sections to the dance, and how long are they? David Tudor almost never asked anything. He just would make something, and he would be working on it on the day of the first performance in the pit during the rehearsal period. They're all, and I'm perfectly willing to answer any questions. They can come and see it, or if they want to. Some wanted to do that. Some like better composing totally separate.
Well, conversely, have you ever worked with a composer in this way and then watched and heard the final product and then gone to the composer and said, you know, if you did this little bit here, it would work better with the dance?
I don't do that. Yeah. I think it's that we are acting in an individual situation, which when it's, and this is true also with the visual artist, when the three of us get together, no one of the three of us could have known what's going to happen.
You started out in your career, as I understand, as a dancer, not as a choreographer. Is that right? Or were you always a choreographer?
Indeed, no, I was a tap dancer.
Really?
In my adolescence, yes, that's where it began.
And when did you move into what we now call modern dance?
I went to a school for the arts, the Cornish School in Seattle, Washington. And I wanted to be in the theater, and I thought, well, drama, but find out. But I also liked dancing, so I began with in the modern dance class.
And when did you decide, I want to do more than this, I want to be a choreographer?
Oh, I think about after I had gone to New York, I was in the Martha Graham Company, and I began to want to make something, and it was John Cage who came to New York at that time, and he suggested we do a program together in a small theater, which we did. I made six solos, and he composed the music for it, and it was when he was beginning with the prepared piano, working with that. So I think most of those pieces were for piano with preparations, and we presented our show.
And what was it like for you when you created your first dance. What was that feeling like when you saw it on stage? Do you remember?
Well, I think I was mostly relieved. But also, I began to see, even then, a little bit about what the possibilities of choreography might be.
Do you ever return to those dances that you choreographed back in the 50s and 60s and revise them, renew them in any way?
We have one of the solos from that program, which one of our company members knows. It's a very short dance called Totem Ancestor. But that still it can be done. And Robert Swinston, again, who assists me, has been doing a series in our studios called History Matters. Could you explain what that is?
Yeah, Trevor Carlson?
Robert Swinston developed a program called History Matters, whereby Merce, along with other panelists, including dancers from the period, and we focus on a decade at a time, show excerpts of dances and films and have a conversation about what that period in time was like and what the works were like and what it was like to work with Merce.
I'd like to talk a bit about how you use technology in your dances today. One of the dances that's being done at the Mandavi Center, the audience is invited to bring iPods so that they can listen to the soundtrack that way. Trevor, could you explain how that works?
Sure. We are fortunate to have worked with the composer Michael Rouse, who has had a history with the John Cage Trust and helped them to digitize one of John Cage's prepared piano pieces, Sonatas and Interludes. They digitized the sounds created by the preparation for that piece. And he wanted to incorporate not only that, but also current technology in the way that Merce incorporates technology in the creation of his pieces. So Michael devised a system whereby preparing a 10-track score that is downloadable onto one's own iPod, or we bring iPod shuffles to the theater for loan to the audience members. An individual then listens to the score. We're told to begin when the curtain goes up.
So they're all synchronized.
They're synchronized only by the individual pushing play. And each of us has a different sound experience depending on the shuffle of our iPods. So you have the same material in the shuffle, but by chance, your experience is going to be different than mine.
But the soundtrack is also played over speakers in the auditorium.
There's an electronic score as well that's played throughout the auditorium. And what's interesting about that is that Michael's directed our sound supervisor to acquire sounds from each of the local venues that we perform in. So there will be sounds from UC Davis present in the electronic score.
Merce, what do you think that does for the process of experiencing the dance, to have people sitting with their own headphones listening to tracks on shuffle?
Well, the public is, I don't mean just our public, I mean the public is getting used to using these technological advances, and the idea of shifting what you hear, the continuity. They've long done that with television, because when they get tired of one thing, they can change to another with the switching the stations. I think so much of our experience now is gained that way, that it can be used, as in this example of an individual who can make up his or her own mind.
You've also worked in film and video. Is it different? Is it better to choreograph something that's going to be on film or video?
I think it's different. I don't think it's better or worse. I think they're equal things in that way. Film and video, for instance, instantly, with the stage, you have a set shape, against which you see everything. But the first thing with the film is that you can shift it. The film or video, you can shift the angle which you see, and in that sense, hear anything. And that right away is a great change, certainly about using it for choreography. It's only one of the things that it is. I don't think one is better than the other. I think that they both are valuable ways to experience art.
How long has it been since you danced on a stage?
Oh, I can't remember. I've tried to think the other day, and I can't remember the last time. Is it 10 years?
No, it was only 5 years ago when you made the duet for you and Baryshnikov, the occasion piece.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. What was that like?
Oh, that was... I enjoyed working with Baryshnikov. He works in a marvelous way. He simply looked at what I tried to tell him to do, thought about it, and then would try it. And there weren't a lot of words necessary, because that's been the way he has experienced dancing all his life. It's something you look at, and then you either you just look at it or you try to do it. And he had such great skill in it as a performer. He's one of the best.
Do you enjoy classical ballet?
Only if it's interesting. I don't like particularly the 19th century works. Not that they can't be well done or anything like that, but because of the form, because the form of them belong to that century, and they don't belong to us. We see things in a different way.
And what do you think about the state and the health of dance today?
I think there's certainly much more dancing in the United States than years back, much more.
And why do you think that is?
I don't know any... I think dancing is something you look at. And most of, like, when you grew up, there was radio, but that was something you heard. Okay, so that works for music. But when television came along, it was something you look at. And that's where dancing belongs. It's not that it's easy to put dancing on television. I think it's difficult. But it is a visual means, and we all look at the television.
And Trevor Carlson is executive director of the Merce Cunningham Dance Company. What do you make of the state of dance as both an art form and as a business today?
I think it continues to evolve, and I think that choreographers and dance companies are beginning to look to find new ways to develop and present their work. Television is an example of that, and technology and the way that Merce has worked with the computer, I think, also is another great example. Motion capture technology has been something that has been tested quite widely with dancers and choreographers. So I think that they're finding new ways of doing things. It's always a struggle working in the arts and trying to support oneself and continue, but you manage, and we seem to continue. As hard as it might feel at times, it's worth doing.
And finally, Merce Cunningham, you've already had such a long and successful career. What keeps you motivated? What keeps it interesting for you?
Oh, I like dancing. I mean, I can do it, but I like the thing of it, movement. Almost any kind of movement, as far as that goes. But... because it's, to me, an absolutely fascinating part of our even daily experience.
Merce Cunningham, Trevor Carlson, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hello, hello. Now the microphones are up.
Good stuff. Well, we are back at Movement Museum. That was a very interesting interview, courtesy of...
some guys on the left coast.
All right.
It was, yes, Merce, who actually I was surprised because they're looking up that interview. Mm-hmm. If you want, just stick in Merce Cunningham into archive.org and you can find the whole thing or email. Oh, yes, got to talk about the email. We have an mm-hmm. email address, movement@ckut.ca.
Woo-hoo.
And we can send you links as well if you'd like to hear it again or do something else with it. Sorry, I interrupted mm-hmm. you. You were going off on some tangent there.
Well, no, I was just saying interesting stuff, interesting interview, and I hope we have many more like it.
I'm planning on it. I suppose I got my fingers crossed. I'm excited because I'm supposed to be interviewing Victor Quijada from Rubber uh-huh. Band Dance
this evening.
And I'm going to be seeing him, whether or not I get the interview, tomorrow night and probably about like 29 hours.
Uh-huh.
My insides are, have I said I'm excited?
Once or twice. Okay. So that leads us really nicely into the awesome calendar for you guys. So Zeke, do you want to start us off with the Rubber Band Dance report?
Yeah, Rubber Band Dance is doing Punto Ciego, which means blind spot. They're doing it from March 25th to April 11th, and that is at the Cinquième Salle of Place des Arts. And yeah, they got extra shows on the 31st and April 7th. And then the fancy-ass cut-and-paste that I did from the Place des Arts website is a fusion of genres, desires, physical demands, and innovations. This is perhaps the best way to sum up the Rubber Band Dance Group, RBDG. Formed in Montreal in 2002, and it goes on to say all sorts of very, very nice and entertaining things about Victor Quijada. Basically, they can all be summed up by saying, get your butt to Place des Arts, spend, I don't know, $20 or whatever it is, go see the show.
Nice.
All right, also we've got Raft 70, which is going to be playing on Thursday, the 26th of March at 8 p.m. And that's
tonight.
Oh, that is tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so there's something to do tonight at the Maison de la Culture de Plateau Montréal. And that is on 465 Mount Royal East. And here's a little blurb about it. Raft 70 is an evening of improvisation designed by Marc Boivin on invitation from Andrew Harwood. Five dancers, a composer, visual artist, and a lighting designer are present at performances. At each performance, the eight staff recreate the work from a working structure. Mm-hmm. The theme of the passage is between people and generations. So there you go.
Wow. Well, going along, tomorrow night, I'm going to be going to a show that's starting tonight, but going on also till the 29th, and that is Domestique Art d'Ameublement by Écumène and Jacques Poulain-Denis. Écumène présente Domestique, sa nouvelle exploration en art sonore. Cette dernière création interdisciplinaire de Jacques Poulain-Denis rend hommage à la symphonie secrète qui est continuellement jouée par l'orchestre méconnu de nos maisons. Impressionnant et noble, une vingtaine d'appareils électroménagers forment le petit ensemble le plus pesant de Montréal. Il dévoile le plan caché de nos vies. So it's all about the appliances in our homes. There's a video out there of people recording washing machines and stuff. So it should be a fantastic interdisciplinary music motion and, you know, everything that we can find in our houses today. So that's a fantastic show happening at the Bain Saint-Michel, that is 5300 Saint-Dominique at 8 o'clock, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, there. I got it confused. I thought it was the other Bains, but it's actually the one that is up here, and actually relative in the heart of hipster heaven.
Oh, yeah.
there is, however, if you're not in the heart of hipster heaven and you're in Châteauguay, there is Le Fils d'Adrien Danse, which are doing their thing called Clash, where they've been touring the province. They've done 43 performances in 24 different places, which means probably roughly two performances per place. And they are, just about to finish. Apparently, it is a slew of colorful characters, funny and touching, that attempt imperfect to carve a place in the world dominated by competition. And yes, if anybody wants, we actually do have. Why we call it the Awesome Calendar is because it really is comprehensive. We try and get absolutely every single dance performance that is out there happening, and there are tons of them. And if you email us at movement@ckut.ca, we can let you know where it is. And so this Clash by Le Fils d'Adrien Danse is happening at 4800 Yuville Boulevard in Chateauguay, and that is on the 27th, which I think is tomorrow night as well. Mm-hmm.
Here's one that I wanted to mention for tomorrow. This is Slam Encore, and it's put on by the Destin Croisé. I was hoping to get an interview with Ismail Meraki, but unfortunately he couldn't make it, so hopefully sometime in the future. And they're going to be performing tomorrow night at the Saint-Michel.
Yeah, Tohu. Tohu, 2345.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There they are at Tohu, and there's going to be some slamming by Queen Ka also, along with some dance. So check that out.
Now, the one that I sort of get a kick out of in showing how comprehensive we are is that Vieux Thomas et la Petite Fée, which is a children's dance performance. It's inspired by an album from Dominique Demers, illustrated by Stéphane Poulin. It's actually a book. If it was illustrated, and they've turned it into a dance performance, and so it's happening on Sunday on the 29th at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's happening at the Maison de la Culture Frontenac, which is 2550 Ontario East.
And another thing showing in Maison de la Culture, this time in Côte-des-Neiges, we have La Poésie des Ailleurs, danssylviendedanse.com is the people that are throwing it on. So it says it will be une heure intense sous la le signe du mouvement et de l'exploration de l'espace débutant par la présentation commentée de quelques vidéos exploratoires des séries de votre ailleurs et des d'ailleurs d'autres. Recherche vidéo chorégraphique diffusée sur le web à www.danssylviendanse.com. Ça, c'est tout un mot. Deux recettes tournées dans le quartier de Côte-des-Neiges. Puis Sylvain Poirier dansera ici, une œuvre solo touchante, évoquante la perte des repères au carrefour de la vie. I'm actually reading this sideways, which is throwing off my orderings a little. Anyway, sounds like it's fantastic. It's happening on the next Wednesday at 8 o'clock at 5290 Chemin de Côte-des-Neiges. So check that out for another fun and interesting combination of video and poetry and dance.
We got time to do one more here, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Here we just scroll down a little bit. Looks like we got Le Printemps de la Danse, and that's going to be coming up on Thursday, April 2nd at 8 o'clock. I guess they've got multiple showings. The first one, that one that I mentioned on April 2nd, is going to be at the Maison de la Culture, the Plateau Montréal. And we scrolled too far here.
Unfortunately, I was looking for more information, but
no, there it's a... No, and I don't even have it up here. How about we say it's 2:59 and 21 seconds, and it's been the end of yet another fruitful and interesting day here at the Movement Museum. If there's anything that you'd like to tell us, hear us, speak to us about, the email address is movement@ckut.ca. And we'd love to hear you. Next week, we're going to have, I think, more stuff than we know what to handle with. Mm-hmm. So, yes, this side, we may even sort of not do the Awesome Calendar anymore. I don't know. Thank you very much for listening. And, thank you very much, Finn.
Dancing on the airwaves.
And thank you, John.
Thank you.
And we will speak to you all next week.